From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. My guest, director Ed Zwicka, I think has made a career out of making movies that deal with loyalty, going from his first film, Special Bulletin, to Leaving Normal, to Glory, The Siege. And his new film, Blood Diamond, definitely deals with loyalty as kind of a theme. Ed, first of all, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Nice to see you.
Would you say that's true? I mean, because loyalty plays such a big part in all these movies. You know, I think about that, just watching and getting ready for this. A question of loyalty, Legends of the Fall, all these movies ask that question of the protagonists.
Well, I know that I try to put people in some situation that's in extremis, and that things that are everyday assumptions and maybe in a more decorous time might not be tested. So I know that when you're talking about relationships and intense relationships, that's stretching the fabric to its limit. I don't know. I'm interested in the contradictions in people as much as I am in their consistencies. And I think I'm interested in those moments when people confront those contradictions in themselves and in their relationships and with each other, and have to decide what are the ties that bind. And I guess that does become loyalty. I had never thought of it in quite those terms, but I think that's probably true.
And I think it certainly plays a big part in Blood Diamond, doesn't it?
Well, I imagined – I wanted to try to find people whose agendas would in some way resonate into that political moment. In other words, a man looking for a diamond and a man looking for his son would create this kind of equivalence, and a reporter looking for a story. And the idea would be that in juxtaposing those stories, that there would be a bigger story, which is to say, a man looking for his son compared to a man looking for a diamond asks the question, what is valuable? And so the loyalty, such as it is, I think has to do with the inevitable ways in which people are drawn together by virtue of having gone through something together. They can't help but recognize each other's humanness. And there's something of that maybe in Glory when you think of the character of Denzel and the character of Matthew, just by virtue of having this commonality of purpose. They have this odd kind of skewed reckoning. And I think in this story, the character that Leonardo plays as Leonardo DiCaprio and Jaimin Hansu are both African men. And the idea that these two people whose lives would never have intersected come into some common universe and confront each other's humanity, if you will, is very much at the heart of the movie.
It's The Treatment. My guest is director Edward Zwicka. His new movie is Blood Diamond. We should say that Leonardo DiCaprio's character is the one seeking the diamond. Jaimin Hansu is looking for a son, and Jennifer Connelly is a reporter looking for a story. And they're all brought together by the Blood Diamond conflicts in Sierra Leone. Because so much, even going back to Special Bulletin, so much of what you've done deals with social issues. Even, you could say, in About Last Night, just the kind of misogyny that was dying out, was very much a big thing still, even in the mid-80s when you made that movie. These social issues become a kind of a crux for you. So I think tie these questions of the ties that bind.
I guess that's true. I mean, I somehow have never wanted to do the big disaster movie or the theme ride movie, or any of these other things that have become the staple of Hollywood. And what can I do that also has size? And I think that ideas have size. And maybe – I'm not sure this was calculated, but I think it's become something that I've counted on. It has to do with taking a relationship or people and having their interaction exist in some context. And the context is a social issue or an idea or a political moment or a historical moment, and that maybe these things might resonate back and forth, or maybe the context provides some edifice on which the story rests, and that might – the truth of one might enhance the truth of the other. And I guess that's been the – the problem solving, if you will, to telling the story.
Interesting thing about you put it that way, because I think the movies, even the well, something like Special Bulletin, which is done for television, or About Last Night, are movies that are kind of epical. Mm-hmm. And epic, at least an emotional scale too.
Mm-hmm. I'm very interested in the epic, but I do believe that those things that happen between people are also epic. I think one's personal journey, I think what one confronts in the inner life, it's not for nothing that the myths of the Greeks have been used to describe those kind of psychological issues. I think they are epic. I think the struggle that people go through one day to the next is epic, and I think in television at times we've tried to describe that on the smaller scale. But in movies, in order to have that not seem so overdone, I think it helps sometimes to contextualize those emotions in some very legitimately large moment where the struggles are writ large and maybe they can contain that kind of emotional expression.
It's so funny you brought up the Greek myths, because there could be a character that would be either Xenophon or Odysseus or one of those archetypes in almost every movie you've done.
Well, it's so funny. I thought about Orpheus a bit when I thought about Gyaimon. Just the idea of this hell, this place that he has to descend into in order to find his son, in his quest.
So often you've used movie stars, and just before we started, I compared you to Sidney Pollack, and being a director who's really interested in finding movie stars or using movie stars in these large scale stories. I mean, even when they aren't on an epic scale, they're still, as we were saying, emotionally epic. And do you think that sort of gives the audience that point of entry? Is that what movie stars do for you?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, by the way, it is important to remember that movie stars began as actors and still often want to be considered as actors. And so to try to give them opportunities in which there are greater complexities and more colors in the palette is something that I think I'm not alone in trying to do that. But that's interesting to think that a movie star certainly a movie star carries with him baggage, both good and bad. And what's often difficult is for a movie star to not be subsumed or overwhelmed by that baggage such that the audience can't get past it and see the story you're telling. I think one of the triumphs, at least that I feel, about Leonardo's performance in this movie is that he is extraordinarily self-effacing, that he loses himself within this part, and within 5 minutes I have no recollection of that movie star but only that person on the screen. And that's a tough trick to pull off when you have a certain amount of persona to carry with you.
It's the treatment, I guess, is director Edward Zwick, whose films include The Siege and, of course, his new film, Blood Diamond. Something I talked to you about before, I think maybe even came up when you were here in the past, is you also take movie stars and put them in ensembles. I mean, even though they're certainly kind of the prow of the vessel, they're still integrated into a world.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are certain actors, certain stars who like to act alone. And they
you tend not to be attracted to those kinds of stars?
I think not. I think that I am as interested in relationship as anything else. I know that. I think that's pretty consistent in my work. And I just tend not to like movies where actors are out in front of it. I think the story finally should be the thing that is the most exalted, the thing that you think about first. I try to even abnegate my work at times for the sake of the story. I think there are directors too who are very self-conscious and want to put themselves out in front.
Is that a hard lesson to learn, that sort of surrendering yourself to the story?
Well, I mean, there's a certain price that one pays for that, I think, and it would be, I think, too easy to do such extraordinarily flashy attention-getting camera work and huge moves, and people seem to assume that means direction, and I just disagree utterly. I think that the direction finally is what one needs to do to tell a story well so that audiences will forget everything but their immersion in that experience. And I think trying to humble yourself just a little bit for its sake not just me but also the actors is something that I do believe in.
How does it manifest itself for you as a director? I mean, does that come in the rehearsal time where you sit with the actors and sort of get them to understand that they are a part of this package and not just the person who's smarter than everybody else who has all the answers at the end of the film?
It's hard to know how one ends up communicating to an actor. You know, there's obviously there's the traditional language of Stanislavski and, you know, obstacles and actions and whatnot. But there's something else that's communicated in a much more unspoken way. I think the way that you talk about a piece, the way that you work on the script with an actor, I think how you frame someone in the scene, how you stage it, I think any number of these things contribute to that result. And maybe even there's some understanding of that because the actor has read the script and has some sense of what it is you're going for. In fact, the only times that I've had any real trouble on the set are moments in which I've dealt with someone who may have thought more about themselves in a particular moment than about the intentions of the overall film.
Well, it seems that even the movies you dealt with, you work with as a producer, like the Shakespeare in Love or Traffic are also films that work as big ensemble pieces.
Well, those are both films that I began developing. And I, so there's no surprise in that.
Developing to direct yourself?
Yeah.
And why did you end up not directing those films?
Well, they're long and very complex sagas.
We got a few minutes here.
I forgot I'm on KCRW. Well, no, Shakespeare in Love is something that I developed first with Mark Norman and then with Tom Stoppard. We spent years on the script. We were 6 weeks away from shooting that film. We had built sets in England that I was going to direct, and it fell apart when Julia Roberts demurred. And I then went into the wilderness with it for about 9 years trying to get that movie made, had put together various casts. At one point it was Ken Branagh, Winona Ryder, and there were others. And finally at the time that the film was finally found a home, I was committed to do something else.
And Traffic?
Traffic was a very interesting circumstance. So Steve Gagan and I had begun working together. I had read an article.
He's the writer, Steve.
Steve's the writer and now director. I had read an article in, I think, the Utney Reader about a drug bust gone awry in South Florida in which the ATF and the DEA and the Miami PD were all in a shootout together where they had stung each other's operations. And we saw the satire. I mean, it didn't take a genius at that time to see that the war on drugs was a comedy. And we began to work on a piece, and Steve spent a long time researching in D.C. And we'd come up with this character of a man looking for his daughter who had become drug addicted. But at the same time, Steve, whose script for an earlier movie had gotten around, got called by Steve Soderbergh, and he had acquired the rights to Traffic.
The British miniseries.
Yeah, T-R-A-F-F-I-K. And they had asked Gagan to write it. And I got a panicked phone call from Steve Gagan saying, what do I do? And at that point, we were only in the very sort of early phases of the script and still lost in the world of research. And again, I was committed to do something else, and I picked up the phone and I called Steven Soderbergh, whom I'd never met, but I had seen Out of Sight very early. And Aaron Brockovich hadn't even come out yet, in fact. And I called him and I said, look, we're both trying to make the same movie. Why don't you direct it and why don't I produce it? And he said, sounds like a good idea to me. And Gagan went and took some of our ideas and a lot of the ideas from Traffic and a lot of the ideas from Soderbergh, and the rest was history.
But you must take some of these pieces of these development schemes that end up being parts of the other movies that you do. I mean, it seems to me not that far, Blood Diamond, in sort of terms of story and theme and texture from Traffic.
I guess. I mean, certainly that is looking at the connections between people and the implications of buying something in one place and its effect on another. I guess in Blood Diamond, it's very much about the implication of we creating the demand for something that then has to be supplied at great cost in a far-off place that we have no awareness of its consequence.
And also about the way we look the other way.
Yeah.
Because we rather have the result and not the process.
Very much.
We'll take a break. My guest is the director, Edward Zwick. His new movie is Blood Diamond. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. My guest is director Edward Zwick. His new film is Blood Diamond. We're talking about all these connections between the films. I'm just thinking about, in terms of controversy, this movie and The Siege are movies that must feel in some way to you like they were going to make a huge impact. To go back to The Siege, could you have had any idea that those techniques of sort of extracurricular torture and violation of the of the Bill of Rights would actually see the light of day?
Well, you know, I don't think it's any fun to take the role of Cassandra, and I don't think that I planned on it. And yet the people that I was talking to at the time, whether they were in the Justice Department or the FBI, CIA, Counterterrorism Task Force or Defense Department, they all believed that that was a reality. They were just waiting for something to happen. I think my technique is the same in this movie in that I went through a rabbit hole and met a lot of people, whether they were victims or victimizers or smugglers or ex-mercenaries or whomever, and I just listened. And you ask questions and people are remarkably open to a filmmaker, even in ways that they probably wouldn't be to anybody else, I think. And particularly so if you bring a movie star along with you. But after a certain amount of listening, the voices begin to rattle around in your head and you find a way to express them. In this sense, a lot of those things that are now controversial or that will be controversial as a result of the film have been known. There's no mystery that I'm revealing, but rather I think what I'm doing is finding a way to coalesce those various strands and put them into popular culture in a way that perhaps they hadn't necessarily been assimilated before. And people look at that and say, oh my God, I didn't know that, when indeed it's been true all along.
As we talk about this, I have to find myself thinking about those old film strip kind of things you'd see where here's a steak. We'll take you through the process, you know. And that's sort of thing you see in the school, just that kind of process of how something ends up from one place to another. But what those things are all about was trying to remove the blood. Mm-hmm. From the stain from that process.
That's right.
And what you're doing in these films, so many of these films, but certainly I think between The Siege and Blood Diamond, is following that item or that event and just sort of showing how we arrived there.
That's interesting. I've never thought of it quite in those terms. I think the process is fascinating. I think the process is also inherently dramatic. I think that, you know, you watch something that's led from step A to step B to step C like a geometric proof. And there's some delight in that and something quite reassuring in following that and something narrative. And I think that the process could be a spine to a story just as much as, you know, a classical three-act structure. So maybe in that sense that's true.
But that process is a big part of the drama in so many of these things that you've done. Mm-hmm. I mean, even going back to Special Bulletin, the way the news story is put together and the question that gets asked about that,
mm-hmm.
we can follow that from over 20 years ago now to what you're doing as a filmmaker now.
I think the difference in this particular case, too, is that what I found myself discovering was so much about a mythology. You know, this notion that a diamond has attached to it so much that has been assumed to be true, that in fact has been the creation of a very carefully orchestrated creation. And so there is something of demystification or demythification going on in this story. And that's something delightful in that too, because there's a trope in movies that nothing is as they appear.
It's The Treatment. My guest is director Edward Zwick, whose new film is Blood Diamond. I should ask you too to describe for the audience, because it's a phrase a lot of people hear and are unsure what it means, what a conflict diamond is.
Well, a conflict diamond is any diamond the benefit of which goes toward buying weapons that furthers the conflict. The idea that people within a war zone will mine diamonds, often enslaving people to mine them so as to illegally smuggle those diamonds to market to buy weapons to further their ends.
And these are often conflicts that are basically unsanctioned conflicts that the United States doesn't really take a stand in one way or the other. A number of Western nations too. I shouldn't just single out the United States.
In fact, in 1999, Sierra Leone, it, to the great shame of the United States, it stepped away and allowed this to happen, as indeed they have done this in other places, particularly in Africa.
I guess as we talk about this, there's so much. I mean, the De Beers Corporation basically sort of started setting out red flags almost immediately. There was some concern about this, even though they're not identified in the film at all. But you can't see the film or hear diamonds if you're an informed person and not think about what they do, which is to, in a way, to assign value to something
yes.
that would have no value if they didn't assign it to it.
Well, and that bespeaks something much more profound about consumer culture, which is the assignation of value by virtue of other people wanting it. And I guess, you know, that was probably goes back to Thorsten Veblen and saying that we consume things, you know, because they then become conspicuous and they show something about us to other people rather than what the fact that we really want them. And in this sense, the idea that there has been a very brilliantly invented reality having to do with this single piece of carbon, and the mythology includes the notion that it's precious, which is not true, the notion that it's rare, which is not true, the notion that it's indestructible, which is also not true. And yet we've accepted this within our culture as something that does have value, therefore it does. And that to me was fascinating, that thing could also be the engine to a story that affected not just the lives of these three people, but of the thousands and even hundreds of thousands in this far-off place.
Well, there's even an allusion to this whole diamond thing about, you know, a certain amount of your salary going to pay for ideally what you should do if you're buying a diamond for somebody. I mean,
right.
All this kind of basically these advertising details go to make these things seem more valuable and tantalizing, these diamonds.
Yeah, and the idea that that love then becomes something that can be empiricized. The idea that you know, a larger the diamond suggests a bigger the love. That's such a contemporary notion that you can monetize love.
It's a treatment. I'm talking to director Edward Zwick about his new film, Blood Diamond. You must have been somewhat concerned because we can't help but read these stories about how the production was supposed to help amputees in the area and money wasn't gotten to them and feel like there wasn't some sort of campaign or something to get to sort of derail a movie.
Well, you know, I'd rather not think that people would stoop to that degree. You know, this was something from a gossip magazine that someone had obviously planted. Their only intent could have been to try to discredit the movie.
Describe the story.
Someone had suggested that we had promised to buy prosthetics for amputees that we had then not only reneged upon but were waiting to deliver so as to gain publicity value for the film. It was just preposterous. When in fact what we had done and had chosen to do in private was to create a fund to help those local villages and people whom we had met and who had been so gracious to us. It was my grandfather who used to say that charity is best given in private, and we had chosen to try to keep it that way. It's become more public now in response to people's silly, you know, accusations.
But that's fascinating because it ends up being almost something that could be part of the movie as well. I mean, the kind of – because there's certainly, again, allusions of the kind of campaigns that are created to sort of hide the blood of the blood diamond.
Yeah, well, it was public outrage and public awareness that brought about some change that has happened. And these great people like Global Witness and Amnesty International, who really are the ones, you know, who deserve any credit for this, at having sort of brought that to the world's attention, used shame. I think that was it's one of the few powerful tools left in activism.
Other cultures too, though, are so key to what you've done in films. I mean, that using these films as a way to sort of open a window to what other cultures are like. And it's that question that often ends up being asked in your films, that question of fear of strangers that we tend to have as Westerners.
Mm-hmm. It's an ironic fear in that we're entirely a country of immigrants. The idea that we become, in some sense, so autocentric, so, you know, xenophobic, and yet everyone in this country came from someplace else. It's one of those maybe it's an inevitable irony. Maybe that often happens, in which someone having re-identified themselves tends to deny their prior identification.
It's the treatment. My guest is director Edward Zwick. His new film is Blood Diamond. Oftentimes there are isolated characters or characters who have to be awakened to their isolation in your films.
Hmm.
I mean, either as an, you know, as an empiricist or just as people just have made eye contact.
The dawning of some consciousness, you mean?
Absolutely.
Of awareness.
Yeah.
Or connection.
That moment of recognition, you know, of what this character, what these protagonists have often been pursuing, that they've been doing kind of, you know, to the detriment of everybody else around them.
Well, either the detriment or at least in almost radical innocence of, in a kind of ignorance, not necessarily so destructive. I know the character that Leo plays is very much a post-apartheid figure. The idea of someone having been raised probably with servants whom he called boy, and yet having gone through 1993 in South Africa, now discovering that the world is different, trying to find his place in it, feeling this connection to this land as his own and yet feeling alienated from it. I think he inhabits those aspects in his characterization. And I think Jaimin plays someone who has been very much living apart from all those aspects, who is forced to reckon with what has happened to his own country.
Were you a little concerned about having a white character as a protagonist in a story about an African country?
Well, I think in this particular case, they are equal protagonists. I think the movie begins with Jaimin and ends with him. I think his journey is the moral center of the film. Certainly, it's the beating heart of the film, the more emotional piece of a man searching for his son. In this story, it was about these people, both white and black. I think to use the phrase two African men is deliberately provocative because, you know, it's assumed that an African man is black. But in certain very specific cases in southern Africa, that's not the case.
Yeah, and that's that can almost have been a story too, that concept that this is someone who's grown up in a country that as he was in his 12 or 13 adolescence, saw the entire scope of his life change around him.
Everything around him, yeah. I mean, and we met a lot of people who had that experience and also had the experience of, as young men, going to fight in Angola, going to fight in what was essentially, and not a bad analogy to the experience of these boys in Vietnam, a war that was not particularly well known at home in the case of South Africa, denied often. Coming back to a place where they were given no counseling, treatment, jobs were not available, and they were assumed, it was assumed that they would just go on with their lives and put that nasty bit of history behind them, and were unable to, and became in many ways a certain lost generation. And there are a lot of those people rattling around sub-Saharan Africa right about now.
Well, Ed, I should thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure.
My guest is director Edward Zwick. His new film is Blood Diamond. Our technical director at KCRW in Santa Monica is Mario Diaz. Bob Carlson is the editor. Mary Bradley produces the show. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.